It's time for the Politics of Imprisonment column for Thursday, August 26, 2004. My name is Tondisizwe Shimaringa, and this week in Black August Resistance History, August 21, 1971, George L. Jackson, author of the book Soul Dad Brother and Blood in My Eye, Field Marshal of the Black Panther Party, prison organizer and revolutionary, is murdered inside of San Quentin Prison. August 25, 1967, the FBI circulates a memo to all field offices regarding its new endeavor to expose, disrupt, misdirect, discredit, or otherwise neutralize the activities of black nationalist, hate-type organizations and groupings, their leadership, spokesmen, membership, and supporters, in addition to frustrating efforts of the various groups to consolidate their forces or to recruit new or youthful adherents. This new endeavor, the Counterintelligence Program, or COINTELPRO, will utilize harassment through the legal system under the guise of law enforcement, including false arrest, wrongful imprisonment, and the use of grand juries as crucial components to accomplish its aims. And August 27, 1839, a slave vessel named Amistad comes into American custody after African captives kill the crew and attempt to return home to the western coast of Africa. The ensuing court trial to determine whether the Africans are now enslaved or free will be a dramatic moment in the struggle for abolition. In Sacramento this past Tuesday, the State Assembly endorsed a bill by the slimmest of margins aimed at reducing the huge proportion of ex-convicts who commit new crimes or parole violations and wind up back behind bars. If signed by the governor, the bill would trigger an unprecedented shift in the mission of state prisons, according to an Assembly analysis. Senate Bill 1399, authored by Senator John Vasconcelos of Santa Clara, would dramatically change how most of the state's 164,000 inmates spend their time. In recent years, budget cuts have reduced inmates' access to education programs, with only about 1 in 4 inmates finding slots. Critics say such limitations are foolhardy, given research showing lower reincarceration rates for prisoners who attend classes. In a 2003 report, the nonpartisan Little Hoover Commission faulted the state for poorly preparing inmates for life on the outside and operating a, quote, revolving door, unquote, prison system. The report said that when released, 10% of California parolees are homeless, 50% are illiterate, 80% are unemployed, and as many as 80% abuse drugs. The bill would require corrections officials to evaluate inmates' educational and psychosocial needs within 90 days of their incarceration and tailor a schooling program for them, one that would include vocational training and high school equivalency degrees. The new approach would be phased in over 3 years beginning in January 2006 and would not apply to convicts on death row or those serving life without the possibility of parole. A new spate of federal grand juries have been called to investigate radical environmentalists throughout the Pacific Northwest. In Eugene, Oregon, authorities are using the highly controversial Romania fire that burned 35 SUVs in 2001 as a catalyst for gathering general information about local dissidents. In the San Francisco Bay Area, a grand jury is currently being convened in connection with the shooting of a police station in the early 1970s that was alleged to have been committed by members of the Black Liberation Army. Grand juries are a holdover from English common law that operate outside of the freedoms granted by the U.S. Constitution and the Bill of Rights. They are used by the federal government to seek an indictment when they lack a suspect and/or evidence. They are sweeping in both scope and design and use the threat of incarceration to compel those subpoenaed to answer all questions put before them. If a person refuses to answer even one question, they can be held in contempt. For nearly a century, activists have accused the federal government of using grand juries as a tool to quell dissent. Grand juries serve to disrupt the cohesiveness of a group, generate internal fear, and discourage new people from getting involved, thus preventing such groups from being effective in opposing government policies. In a time when the federal government continues to broaden the scope of who and how they are allowed to investigate, the need to resist such an intrusion on individual autonomy seems crystal clear. KPFK listeners are encouraged to read War at Home, Covert Action Against U.S. Activists and What We Can Do About It by Brian Glick and published by South End Press for more information. For the KPFK Evening News, I'm Tondisizwe Shimaringa.